Welcome to the Love-O Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Vedanta Aspioti. Vedanta took sannyas in 1987 and has over 30 years experience as a therapist. Vedanta is a medium, author, educator, and the founder of the Power of Light Institute. I'm so happy to have Vedanta on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Vedanta, welcome to the show. How are you?
First of all, thank you, Swaram. This is a very nice invitation because I got to know about your channel a year ago, and I felt it is a very beautiful thing that you're interviewing people around Osho when he has been in the body. It's a very beautiful documentation, so I'm very happy that this is happening now. And yeah, I'm ready to tell the story. I'm very happy to tell the story. Yeah.
Great. So normally we start asking all our guests who met Osho in the body to tell us a bit about how they came across Osho. So tell us how you came across Osho.
Okay. I came across Osho a very strange way. You know, I have been a medium from 18 years old in Greece. And, you know, around the time that Osho came to Greece in Crete, about 3 weeks, I didn't know anything. I was an anarchist. I didn't look at the media. I didn't have television. I was living by myself or with friends, and I didn't know nothing. And but I was doing this thing with channeling, and I was a medium. And at some point, I went into a trance, and my friends were asking informations for my life because I was also channeling for me, if I was asked. And I channeled that in 25 days, I will meet some people, and I will get to know about a great living master, and my life will change. So, and they had it all on tape. So when I woke up, they told me, you have to listen to that. And in the first place, I got angry with my friends that they were doing this because I had not asked that there would be questions asked about me, because I didn't want to know so much. My future was a bit scared. So it happened exactly like this. In 25 days, I met sannyasins that had the center at the time in Athens. And it was just after Osho left the body, so it was a lot of intensity and connection in the sannyasin field, small sannyasin field in Greece at the time. And I get to meet them. And that's how it went. And within about a month, I asked for sannyas after I met them. I did some dynamic, I did some kundalini, and immediately I asked for sannyas. I felt this is for me. I had absolutely no doubt in my heart. And in fact, you know, it's even more detailed that in this channeling, I said, I will meet a man, his name will be this, and he will be a sannyasin or a student and so on. I mean, it was very detailed, actually. So I came in touch with Osho through this channeling. When I think about it, I find it very wild right now. But that's how it went, yeah.
Okay, so and after you took sannyas, did you live in the community with Osho? And if you did, what did you do there?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I took sannyas, the letter came from Pune, 10th of April 1987. And it took me some months with it. And then I left to Pune. I was 22 years old then. I left to Pune. And the first trip that I went, it's even more interesting, more funny. The first trip I went there, I went with my mother because she also took sannyas through me, and the friend of my mother. And also at the time, I was engaged with a man that he, through him I took the sannyas. So we went all four of us first time. And, you know, the first connection to India, to the plane, to the taxi, to the station in Mumbai, I was shocked. I was deeply shocked and didn't know anything about that. 22-year-old young girl in reality. And I went there in Pune and I started already working on myself. And the feeling was, I'm living a very a situation that I need to change. And I started immediately primal therapy. So it was very strong for me. And after that, I went there for a month or two or three or something like that. And after that, I came back to Greece. And very soon, I get myself together and went, started going for a much longer time. And from that point on, I was going 6 months, 8 months of the year for all the 10 years I was in Pune. And I lived, you know, I was taken into the ashram very quickly as a medium because I had already a career. With 22, I was already known as a medium in Greece and in Germany in the New Age scene. All these things is a very interesting story. I was actually a normal person, a student of a university in Athens, and all these events had snowballed into my life, actually. I had no clue. I was taken, in a way. I feel so strongly that my path was to be a sannyasin and around also. It took me, you know, I was led, I was guided, in a way. So, in the meantime, I had connected with Ramadeva. This is an old sannyasin that has been in Oregon and before Oregon even, and has been leading groups around Osho. He was one of the most close people, like 50 closest people to Osho. And he was a therapist in Pune and group leader and so on. But even about that, I had no clue. I was very innocent at the time. And the second time I went to Pune, they have heard already that there was a known medium. So, and at the time, Kavisha and Yogi, they were creating the Osho Mystery School with Diraj also at the same time, the Tibetan healing. They were together at that point. So the Kavisha invited me to give a test session to her and to Yogi. And for me, all that was very impressive. I was very young. I had no clue. And I went and gave a session to Kavisha in her private room and to Yogi. And immediately they were totally excited and very happy that I was to be a channel in Mystery School that was just being created. And I started actually working from 23 years old in the Osho Mystery School in Pune, giving channeling sessions and also other things because I was artistic. My studies in the West were around arts. So I was a florist in the huge groups of the Mystery School. These groups were huge, exploding. You know, it was 120 people in each group. So I was making flowers, big flower pots. I loved it. And then I was making artistic props for these groups, big artistic projects with, I mean, so beautiful opportunities in the ashram. Then I was also sometimes assisting or at some point leading even a few groups and about channeling. Or I was also involved in the Center for Transformation very soon, following the primal stream, primal therapy, and I was there assisting also and learning and all kind of things. And even, you know, even cleaning. I was doing the cleaning, sometimes cleaning in the ashram, which I really loved the most. I must tell, it was very grounding. Cleaning sometimes the, you know, the podium. I was also a medium in the Sanya's office, Sanya's initiation office. What else was I doing? I was doing many things. I was completely enjoying. I was completely enjoying.
Yeah, it sounds like a full life and lots of different activities. And I'd like to come back to how creative was the ashram at the time, with so many people experimenting with so many different things, especially on the therapeutic side. But before we get there, I'd like you to talk us a little bit about a very important moment in your life. I'm referring to the plane crash in 1996. I understand that you survived that plane crash. So first, talk us through what happened, and then tell us how it changed you.
Yes, this is very, very important. But I think I missed something in the previous question. Can I go back to it before I start about the pre-crash?
Yes, feel free. Okay.
Yeah, one thing that I think the most important in all what I was involved in the ashram and being in the commune, I mean, the life in the commune is just something amazing. I mean, it really shaped me. I'm so grateful that in my 20s, I could be in this commune. This is the most beautiful gift in my life. And also to channel, I was channeling in the Krishna house, which was close to where Osho was living. And I would go to trance every day many times in these channeling sessions. And I would completely merge and melt with Osho. This was an amazing feeling. And also, maybe we can talk later if you want to come back to it. The feeling I had when I was seeing Osho in the white robe meditation, the white robe in the meeting in the evening. This is something I want to speak about, but okay, I will speak first about the crash. So that was in 1996. I was visiting Niten in Australia, that we were connected. We were having a little affair at the time, a little interest or something like that. And at one day, we go around in a walk. He wanted to show me his tea tree plantage that he has there. And there was living Amitabh in a house in the tea tree plantage. And Amitabh was the pilot of Osho, that he flew Osho around the world, etc. And he came out of the house and he was proposing to have a little tour with a plane, private plane. And as a psychic, it was revealed to me at this moment because I saw his aura. There was a lot of blackness in his aura and I had the message inside that Amitabh would die within a week. And then after Amitabh went inside the house, I turned to Niten and I asked, tell me, what is happening? I had this message. So anyway, I cut the long story short. Although I had this message, because I was in a very difficult state in my life at this moment, a big change, and I was sad and I was not fully, I don't know how to say, I was not in a completely positive mood, I went to this play. In some level, I knew that something will happen. And from this, I learned that I have to really listen to my intuition, the intuition of my heart. So it was a huge lesson for me. Nevertheless, this crash brought a huge change in my life because it confronted me with death. And when we are so close to death, I found out that we cannot hold on to image, to ego trips, power trips. So I was stripped from my ego. I was totally dismantled. I was disintegrated. And that was a great gift. So I lived without my ego for a while. And that was very, very powerful for me. And the first thing is that so many friends and so many people rushed to my help. And that broke all the walls of my childhood hurt that I'm not loved, I'm not wanted, I'm not cared for. All my childhood trauma. So it was a big, big healing in so many levels for me. And also noticing the body and what the immense suffering the body does. And, you know, finding my spirit and the will to live and to have a completely pro-life direction. And also what I learned from the crash is that one should never give up life. Life is the greatest gift. And when we are alive, we can take our life in our hands. And we need to have courage and strength and follow 100% truth and stand our ground. And I feel so grateful to all the people that rushed to help me. Everybody. And my best friend and partner at the time, Ravi, another sannyasin, very beautiful person. And, you know, I feel so grateful about what happened to me. Many times they ask me about my accident, if it was a huge disaster and everything. And, of course, it was a huge disaster, but it was maybe the second greatest gift in my life after meeting Osho. That's what I have to say.
Talking to other sannyasins, sometimes they describe meeting Osho a bit as a death. And now it just came to my mind this parallel, because just you said that this was the second greatest gift after meeting Osho. And in fact, perhaps we can link to the way you were describing before your meetings with Osho in White Robe, because the way I experience, and the way also I listen to other sannyasin talking about Osho, is that sometimes being in front of him, it was being in front of total absence. There was no man there. It was just some pure emptiness. And that's a very similar description of people when they talk about facing death. So I don't know if there is any connection there that you want to comment.
Yes. That's what I was referring to before, that I made a little sidetracking in your question about the crash, because what I experienced in meeting Osho is exactly a sort of death. I never experienced this before or after, I must say. It's amazing. He would come out in the white robe, and I felt like complete disintegration. I felt I forgot my name, I forgot who I am, I forgot everything. And I felt like every cell in my body was exploding. I cannot describe that. It's like, I don't know, is it the most huge orgasm or the greatest death? I don't know how to explain it. But it was a certain state that it never happened to me after that. I must really say that sincerely. And at the time, every time, almost after he left from the Buddha Hall, I went into such a deep sobbing and crying, sometimes for hours. I mean, it was also, I met him 2 years before he left the body, and I had this feeling, I don't know, that he would not be so long, you know, in his body. It was mostly about that also, but as if it was the love of my life. And I don't know, it was so powerful. It was a sort of death every night. Yes, that's what it was. I must tell, I was completely taken. I was completely taken.
That's beautiful testimony, because you guys met Osho, who is one of the greatest master ever walked on planet Earth. And it's very difficult to give a sense of how it was to be with him physically in the body. And you guys had the privilege of that, and to have that experience. I'm very grateful that we have the opportunity to capture your memories, your experience, and your testimony of that moment. And yeah, sometimes I feel very envious in a way that I haven't had that opportunity.
But my feeling is, you know, if you have Osho in your heart and mind and body inside, I feel the love continues. The love continues. But I must also say that I felt so grateful that I could meet Osho in the body, you know, because it was 2-3 years before he left, you know. So I feel very grateful to life. I have so many reasons to feel grateful in the life. First of all, that I met Osho. I survived an aeroplane crash. I have such beautiful friends from our field. And also, I have a daughter, you know. So these are so many blessings.
Yeah, that's wonderful and great to hear that. So I'm wondering, how is for you when you think of Osho, connect with Osho, when you meditate now that Osho is no more in the body? Is there any difference from when you were sitting in front of him?
Yes. Look, what I have to say is, like, when I was there, it was like a school in a way for me. Like, you know, can you imagine 22 until 25? I was so immature. I was very fresh, innocent in a way, but at the same time, you know, slowly I got to understand and know myself a little bit, or feel myself. And, you know, I had to do a lot of primal therapy, a lot of clearing up my childhood. So at that time, I was full of my conditioning, so to say, and you know, slowly, slowly, I arrived into what I am today. So, you know, to me, in a way, it's no difference, I must say, honestly. Osho is inside me, and it will be forever. To me, this is a love affair that if you surrender to this love, it cannot be taken away. And it's like you fall in love with the soul. How can you not be in love with the soul anymore? So if he's in the body or not in the body, the love affair always continues. So, but for sure, to be with Osho in the body was something so amazing, such a unique experience. And my feeling is it will never be in the way. I mean, I never had this experience after. But in a way, he's inside me. I mean, you know, it's difficult to differentiate because it's 24 karat gold love. You know, it's forever.
Yeah, well, and what's gone is gone. But it's very encouraging to hear that love is eternal. And, you know, I feel like I'm in love with Osho, so I can connect with his soul, even though he's not physically here anymore. So going back to life in the commune, listening to you and other sannyasins, it seemed like a dream life and so much creativity, so much talent, so much expression and freedom, and all these youth, young people full of energy doing all sorts of things. And it was very active, especially on the therapeutic side. If I am not wrong, I think even Osho said that out of all the sannyasins who were there with him, many were therapists. Many therapists were attracted to Osho because they were learning from him and they had the freedom to experiment and come up with new techniques. And Osho left a huge legacy. And you are a living example of it because you do work and you train and you help psychotherapists in the work. So I'm curious to hear how you see this experiment of Osho, who for the first time in history combined modern psychotherapy with meditation, and you know, if you agree in saying that what most of what we see nowadays in the therapy field is influenced directly or indirectly by Osho and the sannyasins who learn from him and often went to teach others.
Absolutely, I agree with you, Sparam. Absolutely. I mean, the time that I was so blessed to be in my 20s there, it could not have been a better time to be there for me. It was indeed so much creativity, so much blossoming and booming. I mean, it is not to be conceived. It's amazing what we experienced there. The freedom, the talent, the expression, the yes to life. I mean, so much expansion. And I absolutely agree that the influence of Osho into the modern therapy is very, very strong. And I must really say, because I'm involved as a therapist in many things, and I always like to be following and seeing what is pioneering now today and so on. My feeling is the modern therapy that is still very influenced from him and his vision still is not that far yet to go all the way what Osho brought. What do I mean? You know, Osho's vision and message is about totality. And for people to reach totality, they have to let go of their egotistical mind, egotistical ego conditioning. And this is the strongest message. And if you look, for example, the today therapy, they have been influenced, but to reach that level, to talk about the ego or to fully grasp the message about letting go of the egotistical ego, and that is the greatest healing, modern therapy is not yet there. I mean, outside of the sannyas world. They are not yet there. For example, the techniques of dynamic and kundalini, which I feel, I mean, the meditations, actually, I feel they are life-saving meditations. For the modern therapy to get there, it will take another 20 to 50 years, I think. I give you an example. In our days, there is a lot of trauma therapy approaches, which is great. And all they have come up with understanding about the tremor, the orgasmic reflex, what also Wilhelm Reich or Alexander Lohn described, and letting go of the fear, etc. Restoring the flow in the body, etc. I mean, also talked about that and created Kundalini meditation, which is exactly about the shaking, the tremor. And if we see the instructions about Kundalini meditation in the, for the first stage, he says, let go of the doing the tremor, the shaking, and let the shaking happen, which is exactly about what Reich and Lohan brought, and the modern therapies about trauma are speaking, healing trauma, about letting the body shake and defreeze from the frozen state. That was already created in the Kundalini meditation, how many, 30 years before the trauma therapy came along? This is amazing. But my feeling is that we don't know yet how beautiful and how strong these techniques and ideas and visions are of Osho. It needs to be more discovered and more researched. And I think this will be part of what's going to happen in the future. I think what Osho brought is even more pioneering than where therapy is today in general, as a general movement, you know. And also, if you see a lot of therapists, they say, yeah, we respect the defense and we should not go beyond the defense and things like that. Well, actually, Osho spoke that we have to face the defense. Eventually, if we want to transform and go for life, we will have to face and confront the defense. Some techniques in the now, modern therapeutic techniques, they say about that, but they say, yes, and so maybe. So there is so much more work to be done. Yeah.
Well, that's very, very insightful, especially because you are a professional working with therapy, and at the same time, you are a sannyasin who met Osho in the body, so you have a deep understanding of what you're talking about, and it very much resonates of my limited understanding, because I see lots of therapies going around and sometimes even coming up with all sorts of new techniques branded as new, but in reality, they're all kind of riding the wave of what Osho brought. But if you say that it's Osho, for some reason, you know, people don't accept it, so they kind of hide Osho, and then they create some new techniques with some new names, and they claim that it's their own thing. So I don't know if you see this in the therapy, or is it just me, and that, you know, I'm a little bit of a lunatic fanatic of Osho, but I think it's sometimes it's fair to say how things are.
Yes, yes, I agree. And yet, Svaram, we have to see the state of humanity, yeah? And the state of the ego. It's like people are so afraid to let go of their image, of their personality. And that is the difference, that in the therapy with Osho, we are directly connecting with those essential truths about letting go of the ego. I mean, it's beautiful to have a functional ego, an ego that is side by side, serving the self, serving the being, yeah? A functional ego, of course, we need. And, you know, the therapies or the state of the world is so, I mean, they are all so afraid about letting go of the image, yeah? Many people don't know about the difference between the ego, the personality, and the self or the being, you know, the uniqueness, the individuality. They don't know the difference. Yeah? And the beauty of the Osho therapy is that it brings us exactly to that edge, to that understanding. It's a preparation to meditation, of course, to getting to know oneself. So the in reality, therapy is just a means to come in touch with oneself and feel oneself and discover oneself, rediscover actually what has been already there from the beginning and we got disconnected from. Most of the therapy doesn't understand this truth. You know, most of the therapy talks about something they don't even have any idea about, how to get there or what it is. Yeah. So I'm very glad that Osho came with those messages. You know, and I feel humanity will be busy with that, but it's still pioneering. You know, that's why they want to hide it. It's scary. Let go of your image, let go of your personality, then who will you be? Yeah. So this is scary stuff. This is scary.
This is quite, you know, powerful. And in fact, probably, you know, we mentioned many times that Osho is a pioneer, and it may take another 50 or 100 years for people to really get his message and realize his vision. And you are definitely one of those pioneers who is trying to do that. In fact, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the specific work you do. As I mentioned in the introduction, you are the founder of the Power of Light Institute. So how is your approach to therapy? I'm sure it's related to what you were discussing just now. And perhaps if you can expand more about how meeting Osho changed your approach to therapy.
Yes. You know, yes, I created the Power of Light. I created the Power of Light training and institute processes, etc. already when I was living in Pune. The inspiration is 100% from what I experienced and learned with Osho. And in a way, my vision was always to create a small Pune experience for people during this courses or work or processes. That's why I created the work. So the Power of Light Institute is offering this kind of training and therapy, etc. And it's the basic process is 4 years training to train therapists or to give more education to therapists that are already have studied psychology or psychotherapy, or even psychiatry. And it is based on the teachings of Osho and, you know, about discovering or rediscovering the self, feeling the self in relation to another, because always, I mean, we are relational beings, so it is in a relation, in connection. So it is about clarifying the pro-life direction. It is about finding that metal in the heart and soul of following truth and serving truth, and the courage to be your own self and stand up beyond your conditioning and want to drink life and taste life and be in the life and transform and live a life not according to compromises and conditioning and this kind of mind limitations, but how to be a light unto yourself and for others in the life, in the society, not necessarily that we have to go to the Himalayas and be that, but in the world, to be in the world, but not of this world, and bring those messages in the life, you know. And for sure, it is about working with the body, working with the feelings and emotions, opening the heart, becoming more present, being grounded in the life and standing on your own feet and taking the life in your own hands and not shy away from own responsibilities, but take on your responsibility for being alive in this world, not being, fleeing from the life, but standing your own ground in the world. You know, in the beginning of my connection to Osho and so on, I had the feeling more to flee from the world and escape. I was feeling more weak, more fragile in that sense. And my sense now is, no, let's go mainstream. Osho and what we have experienced and what we feel and what we know inside is not marginal. It's not something for a faraway land up to the Himalayas. Actually, we need to bring this taste into the world. The world needs it, you know, for our life and the future of humanity. We need to bring that here, yeah? So I decided to go mainstream and not to go on the periphery of society.
Well, that resonates a lot with me as well, and it's quite a challenge, and I think that's one of the Osho's legacy that he left us, to carry on his message in life. It's so much easier to think, okay, I just want to live in a commune or just retire and just go somewhere in nature and just meditate and live in a small kind of bubble, if you like, because, you know, living in the world is not easy. You know, it's just a crazy world we live in. There are so many problems and challenges, and especially if you want to be meditative and you're a sensitive person, a sensitive soul, it's difficult, you know, that's the reality of it. But it's great that there are, you know, people like yourself who decided to take responsibility and face those challenges and go mainstream, bringing this authenticity and integrity of Osho's work. I really appreciate that and I love it.
Yes, that's exactly my motto. Why to hide it? Actually, to spread it is the challenge, to spread it, not to hide it, not to keep it away, to make it known. Yeah, and you're right that, you know, it is so difficult sometimes with that sensitivity, with that depth, with that vulnerability to live in the world. I completely agree, and for me it's the same. I'm a vulnerable person. The more meditative I became, the more sensitive, the more in touch and in tune, seeing the craziness of the world. But also, when you meditate and you decide deeply in your heart and soul for this type of life, that gives so much strength inside. And my feeling is we have a strength, an immeasurable strength that we are not even aware about, because the connection to being and truth makes us so strong. And of course, it's not about going with the fist on the knife out in the craziness of the world. Not about that. But in a noble and gentle and polite, if you like, way. In a beautiful, in a graceful, not even polite, in a graceful way, showing the gift that we got. Because the world needs it. Yeah. So I decided to write the books in Greek and in English. So the Greek books are in the books of here in Greece, talking about that message. And there are books about education, children, parents, teachers, and in general people that want to understand and work on themselves. So these books are in the bookshops, and I'm very happy about that. I'm very happy.
And I'm very happy as well to hear that you're doing what you're doing, and it's great. The last part of the interview, I wanted to discuss even more about the contribution you're making to the world, really, especially in Greece, because I understand you work a lot in the education field. You train parents and teachers, and you are a consultant for school. I believe you founded an elementary school in Athens with 320 kids. It's quite amusing that Osho Sanyasin is doing this work today, considering that back in the 80s, Osho was not allowed to stay in Greece and suffered the same accusation that Socrates had suffered 2,500 years ago, corrupting the mind of the youth. And now it seems that Osho's message is surviving through you and is living in you, and you somehow carry on his work in Greece in your own way, of course. And so what elements of Osho's vision on education you implement in your work with teachers and parents, and in which way you are corrupting the mind of the youth?
I love it. I love your question. I mean, you know, I work, as you said, in Greece a lot, but also I work a lot in Holland lately, in Poland, also in UK, I work for a group in Denmark, so I'm spread. But what I do in Greece, we created that school, as you said, and then I do a school for teachers, school for parents in Greece. I go to different schools, I'm invited, I have the books, you know. So how do I corrupt the youth? Actually, it is so beautiful, Svaram. At some point, you know, working with the teachers, working with the parents in the same school, and then it's like a paradise, like for the good of the children, parents and teachers collaborating on basic essential truths of the being. It's just magical. I must say it's magical. It's really magical. And You know, in Greece, you can connect the message of Osho very easily with what Socrates said, with what Plato said, with what Aristotle said, with what Heraclitus said. I mean, Osho has talked about those people. There is a tradition, in fact, in Greece. There are principles of these sacred ideas, holy ideas, or however we want to call them. So it is not so difficult, I find. And, of course, I don't advertise it or I don't propagate it as Osho. If people want to know more about me or what I do, of course, they get to know about that. I don't hide it, but I speak it. And that is I transmit it. That is the main thing. And it's very beautiful, I must say. It's like a garden paradise to have children expanded and children seen and children left undisturbed in peace and supported to develop and expand the way their true nature wants them to expand. It's amazing. I felt sometimes if I would not be a therapist, I would like to be a teacher of children. It's so beautiful, you know, to see them in the classroom, how they respond, how intelligent and beautiful and strong they are when they are met, where they are in their beingness, you know, in their being. It's beautiful. I don't know what else to say about that. It's, if you want me to tell you more details, but, you know, we have that school, and that school is a pioneering school. And, you know, I must say that, you know, we can use the structure of society, all the different windows and holes that they are in the laws and constitutions, to pass the message. You know, in reality, if we have lawyers and studied people and people that are doing that type of work, we can always find the windows in the laws to pass the line. You know, and that's what we did with the school. We found out all the different windows in the educational laws that allows us to apply the model according to the vision of Osho. That's what we did here.
And that's amazing to hear how you can work around the openings that, you know, are allowed by the reality of Greece society nowadays. And it's also beautiful that you can kind of link Osho's message to the old philosophical tradition and beyond philosophy. You know, I'm pretty sure that Socrates is presented as a philosopher, but he was more of a mystic, more in line of an enlightened master, like you know, Buddha or Osho. And the way Osho described and talks about Socrates, that's the idea I get. And in fact, there is a whole section, even when I study philosophy, by the way, and at the university in Rome, there was a professor that claimed that there is a whole esoteric tradition, especially in Plato, that was lost and was just transmitted orally. So there is no written record of that. So, yeah, and again, we're so fortunate with Osho that everything that he spoke about is recorded, so we can all benefit from it, because most traditions in the past, they got lost. And somehow I see Osho as someone that came to this planet to revive all those old traditions and make them available. So, yeah, so where people can find you or know more about you and perhaps even support you in the work you do in Greece and also in the rest of Europe. Do you have a website or anything like that?
Yes, I have a website, and the website is Channeling the Source, and or Google Powerflight Institute, Vedanta Spyoti. And we are writing a lot of things about, you know, what we do with the, even with the school, with the books, with the education, with the Powerflight training. And yeah, I mean, I feel very blessed, I have to tell you, because there are many people coming to us and many people that want to contribute. And I feel so grateful to each one of the people that come to work with us and with me. I learn so much. Every day I learn. Meeting the soul of everyone is such a humbling lesson. You know, I feel grateful. That's all what I want to say. Yeah. And people are welcome to connect directly, to write to me. I am someone that takes hours and hours to answer mails. You know, I love the personal connection to people. This is very beautiful. Yeah. I love to share the message.
Yeah. I can feel that. I can feel your enthusiasm and beautiful energy. So that's great. And I will link everything in the show notes of this episode. So if anyone is interested, they can just click there and find you there. So yeah, heading towards the end, I have three final questions which I ask all the guests on the show. So the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Okay, so thanks God that I had such a long practice with Osho. And in the morning, I have to wake up usually 6:30 and be really meditative and present to make sure that my daughter goes to school in her best way possible, in a good mood, to balance her, to regulate. And I have to be meditative for that. And then the next couple of hours, I always write on my books. And this is my meditation, like, you know, this writing the message. Every day I do that since the last 10 years for sure. You know, I mean, with my daughter earlier because she's 16 and a half, but the books the last 10, 12 years, this is my morning meditation. Yeah, that's what I do.
Amazing. Okay. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
My favorite meditation, my absolute favorite meditation is dynamic meditation. This is life-saving. It saved me because it's so modern, so unique. It never humanity saw something like that. It is so cohesive. It makes so much sense. It is liberating. First, you cathart the craziness of the mind and the conditioning. Then you be silent. Then you celebrate. In the beginning, you breathe. Then with the who stage, you feel your strength and power and discipline. I mean, there is nothing more beautiful than that. It combines in reality, dynamic meditation, so many disciplines in it that it will be a subject of study for 100 years. I tell you, it's an amazing thing. It's beautiful. It's the most beautiful of all.
And I totally agree. And in fact, it's unbelievable. It's 1 hour. And there is so much condensed in it that, you know, I can talk forever about dynamic. You know, I love it. Okay, so the last question is, you live the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating the new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
What means to be with Osho? It means carry on, keep on, spread the message, spread the vision. There is something to believe. Humanity needs it. Be a light upon yourself and others. Be in the life. Be lion-hearted. Be a brave heart. With your vulnerability, with your strength, and never give up. That's what it means to me.
That's very, very beautiful and very inspirational, because of course there are moments where, especially again for sensitive people, can be a little difficult, but hearing you and your lightness and your enthusiasm and your strength is definitely very inspirational. So, well, that's the end of the show. Thank you so much, Vedanta. It's been lovely connecting with you and recording your testimony and feeling your love for Osho. And we are all about loving Osho. So that's a wonderful episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Varam. My heart is very happy.
Likewise. Take care. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.